Okay, so I wanted to start just by briefly recapping what essentially we did during the last 1.5 or 2 lectures before we move on. Just again to set the scene for what is to follow. So essentially what we've done so far attacking the general Riemann problem is we looked at special solutions, and essentially we did so by fixing our left state for the Riemann problem in a state space, so where our conservative variables live. And so we essentially made the observation that if we look at integral curves along the eigen, so that are provided by the eigenvector fields of our Jacobian, so of our conservation law, we can. If we follow such an integral curve, we actually find special solutions that are called rarefaction waves. So let's say this is the integral curve. So this would be the kth eigenvector field that defines those integral curves. And so this is what we call these integral curves RK. So associated with the kth eigenvector field. And we made the observation that if this kth eigenvector is genuinely nonlinear, then it actually has then the characteristic speed, so the signal speed along this curve actually monotonically increases in one direction. So let's say it increases in the direction that I indicated here. And then we've seen that in this case where in this branch RK plus, where the signal speed is greater than the signal speed at UL, if I pick any state along this curve, the corresponding Riemann problem will be solved by a rarefaction wave. This is essentially what we found out. This branch down here, which we called RK minus, where the signal speed is smaller than the signal speed at UL, that branch doesn't give rise to any special solution. So that would be compressive initial data. Now, then we went on to show the existence of yet another class of special solutions. And those were the shock waves. Again, another class of nonlinear waves. And so we were showing that essentially those can be these are also one parameter families of solutions. And the reason why this comes about is because sort of all the points on these curves satisfy by construction the Rankine-Ugyanov jump conditions. So remember that the jump conditions were given by this expression where the difference in fluxes has to equal the difference between the state vectors multiplied by the speed of the shock front. And so these are essentially 2m conditions. So these are essentially so these are m plus, so these are m conditions. And so we have m plus one unknowns, 2m plus one unknowns essentially. So UL and UR both have m components, right? And then we have also the shock speed s. And so if we fix UL here, then we have m plus one free parameters. So if we vary UR, we get a one parameter family of curves. So this is why essentially all these points here in phase space, in state space that satisfy these jump conditions are a family of a one parameter family of such curves. And so this in the case again where lambda k is genuinely nonlinear, we know that also here the signal speed has to vary along the shock curve. Now, we were also showing that they share the same tangent vector at UL, and so in fact the signal speed must also increase along this curve in this way, because that's dictated by the integral curve that we looked at just a few seconds ago. So this then also gave rise to two branches. So one branch that we called S plus K, and a branch that we called S minus K. And along these different branches, again, there are solutions that correspond to shocks. We've seen that, maybe I should just remind you of the definitions here. So SK plus were those states that have a smaller, where the signal speed where the signal speed increases, and then the other branch is where the signal speed decreases. Now, these are those we concluded are not admissible because they don't satisfy the Lux entropy conditions. And so this is because here the signal speed actually increases across the shock speed. So we have actually diverging characteristics from the shock front. And so the entropy would actually decrease across that shock front. So that is not admissible. And so we had identified this other branch, SK minus, as the branch of admissible solutions. So this is roughly the situation we have. And now there can be special circumstances under which actually the shock set SK can be identical to the integral curve, so identical to the solutions where our rarefaction waves live. And this is exactly the case of contact discontinuities. And that's the third and last class of special solutions that I just wanted to briefly define here before we move on and actually discuss the general Riemann problem. But maybe in the meanwhile, if anyone has a question so far, maybe now is a good time.
Yes, if you don't mind, Daniel.
Sure.
So I think I'm realizing I didn't quite get what was happening in the last two lectures. So I was under the impression that, okay, let me ask first. So the SK solutions, mm-hmm. are they similarity solutions?
Yeah, that is a good question. So for sure, the rarefaction waves are similarity solutions.
Right.
And so the SK solutions also have to be similarity solutions because the equations, so the conservation law are give rise to similarity solutions, and the initial data, meaning the Riemann problem, is also a similarity initial condition. And
that's why I'm asking, because I was under the impression that when you're looking for similarity solutions, mm-hmm. you must be getting solutions that are integral curves of the eigenvector field. And I don't see where the SK solutions fit into that description.
OK, Okay, so why are you saying that the similarity solutions only correspond to those lying on integral curves?
Well, I guess that may be my misconception, because when I look at the conservation equation and then I make the similarity ansatz, mm-hmm. and I go through the math, I end up with what looks like the eigenvalue equation for the solution.
Okay.
And then, so I guess what you're saying is that, well, this defines one class of solutions, but there's another class. I'll have to go back to your notes to see where this, you know, how this comes about, because right now I mean, from what I understood of this, which I guess is not adequate, I don't see where it comes from.
Right. Yeah, I'm happy to discuss this more. So, but in general, solutions don't have to be on integral curves of one specific eigenvector field. So those would only be the rarefaction ways. All the other ones, and the contact discontinuities as well, because they are a special case. But the shock solutions are in general not on a on an integral curve. I mean, the two states UL and UR cannot be connected by an integral curve in that case.
Right. Okay. So I need to understand that better. Thank you.
Yeah, we're happy to discuss more. Any other questions? Yeah. Okay, then let me introduce those this sort of corner case and this third class of special solutions. So, and this starts with a statement, which gives rise to the definition. So again, let's say we're looking at a strictly hyperbolic system. And let's say now we are in the case where the eigenvector, the characteristic field is linearly degenerate for some k. And in general, we can always, if this is the case, at some point, we can always assume there's a tiny region, a finite tiny region around that point, D, in which that is the case. And the statement is that for all states in this in a set, we have that the integral curve now actually matches the shock set. So this is the special case where these shock solutions actually lie on such an integral curve. And in this case, also the shock speed equals the characteristic speed. And so this would be for all z in the shock set. So in other words, the discontinuities, or speaking in terms of a shock solution, the discontinuity of the solution is actually along a characteristic. So it's parallel to the LK, lambda k characteristic. So gamma prime equals lambda k, which is the shock speed in this case. So I'll draw a picture in just a minute to illustrate this a little more. Let me just first briefly show how this comes about. This can be seen sort of fairly easily from the definitions that we've made so far. So if we look at the integral curve again of our kth eigenvector and our kth eigenvector. So that integral curve problem is again given by V prime, where V is denotes the curve. V prime equals RK. And say at zero, we are at UL. And so this parameter that parameterizes the curve just lives at least in some finite interval around zero. And solution always exists as long as A is sufficiently small. So this is how we would go about constructing the integral curve given some point UL in our state space. Then since this eigenvector field is linearly degenerate, we'll see that actually the signal speed along this integral curve does not change anymore. So there's no monotonic increase or decrease along the curve, which was necessary to give rise to shocks or to rarefaction waves. So if I just compute this by the product rule, and then making use of the fact that we're looking at an integral curve here. So this would be just gradient lambda k times rk. And so this is by assumption zero. So this was just a definition of a linearly degenerate eigenvalue and eigenvector pair. So lambda k is constant along the integral curve RK. And now we can show that solutions on here also satisfy the Rankine-Ugrenew jump conditions, and then they are actually part of the shock set. And then we have just proven the above statement that the integral curve is exactly the shock set in this case. So the trick here is just to start with one side of the Rankine-Ugrenew jump condition. So let's look at the differences in flux along this integral curve. So this here is our sort of U right, in a sense. And so this can be just written as an integral over the Jacobian at this point. Oops. Yeah, I think I called it T here. Along this curve. And so now we're just making use of the fact again that this is an integral curve. So V prime is proportional to RK. And then RK is an eigenvector of the Jacobian. So we get that this is just equal to lambda k along the curve times rk. integrated along this curve. And now we're just making use of the fact that lambda k actually doesn't change, is constant along rk. So we can pull it out of the integral. And can set it to the value at UL. And then just reinserting the fact that RK is proportional to V prime. Just get lambda K UL times U of Xi minus UL. And these are exactly the Rankine-Ugyen-Yu jump conditions with a shock speed equal to lambda k. And so this was the second part of the statement. So rk equals the shock set. So where they exist. And the shock speed S equals lambda k. So in this linearly degenerate case, the shock set and the integral curve are identical. And so this is exactly what defines a contact discontinuity. So just to write this down in a precise way. Let's say we have a weak solution. With a discontinuity. Along some curve sigma, which we'll define as in the case of a shock, you may remember. So, which lives in our real space of the 1D conservation law. And let's say we have a characteristic field, so eigenvalue lambda k of our Jacobian, which evaluated at either side of this discontinuity actually equals to the speed of this discontinuity. Then we call this a contact discontinuity. And so just to be sort of precise, this U plus minus is defined in general also for those cases where we don't have constant states to the right and left of the discontinuity. So this is just sort of defined as the limit as you approach the discontinuity from the right and the left. So if you're sort of plus or minus epsilon away from the discontinuity, and you take the limit, then this discontinuity is called a contact discontinuity with respect to the eigenvalue lambda k. Now let me just draw a little sketch to make this sort of abstract definition a little more concrete. So the defining property here is really that the characteristic speed lambda k on both sides of the discontinuity sigma are the same. So these k characteristics look like the following. So this is our real space. And say we have some discontinuity here, then the k characteristics here are all parallel to sigma. So here we have our right state. So if we have a Riemann problem, constant left and right states. And so in this case wave of the solution, essentially the fluid elements don't cross the discontinuity here. So the characteristics neither impinge nor diverge from the discontinuity, but everything stays parallel. And that is essentially the defining property of these special solutions. And one can directly write down the solution. So we look at the Riemann problem here in this case, where lambda k and rk are linearly degenerate. And our right state ur is in the shock set of UL, which then is identical to the integral curve, then the solution to the Riemann problem is given by this very simple structure that looks like shock solution. Where the shock speed is given by the kth eigenvalue of the Jacobian. Okay, so this is essentially just a special case in between a shock solution and a rarefaction wave. And this is essentially all I wanted to say about this sort of special type of solution for now, and sort of move on now to the local solution of the general Riemann problem. So when we try to connect two different, so two sort of arbitrary states in our state space. Any questions on this? Okay, well, if not, then I just move on. Put all of this together, and then maybe a few things may make more sense. And so this is this very old problem that goes back to Riemann in 1860. So actually I have, I wanted to quickly show you this original paper by his. So I found it in the archives of the library at Göttingen University, where Riemann used to be a professor back in the late 19th century. So actually, okay, I have to scroll down here. Actually, I lost the... Unfortunately, I lost the position where it actually is. Anyways, it is not too interesting to actually look at it. One has to actually go through it and read it. Unfortunately, it's in German, but it's actually very interesting because Riemann, back in 1860, already realized some of these concepts and was already aware of those. So for example, he seemed to have already some intuition and some understanding of weak solutions. So he actually describes special solutions to the to this Riemann problem. So he sort of introduced this problem and was interested in finding solutions to it. And he already realized that there are that it gives rise to discontinuous solutions. And certainly the understanding of weak solutions was not developed by him so there's essentially not a modern understanding of weak solutions here, but he had some intuition about it, and he already defined some of these special solutions, namely shocks and also rarefaction waves. So these are called Verdünnungswellen in German and Verdichtungswellen. Shocks, converging solutions, and sort of verifying solutions. So he already coined essentially these terms. But then it took essentially another 100 years until 1957, so 97 years, until Lux actually first solved the problem in a general sense. So in this seminal paper back in 1957, he develops most of what we've actually discussed here in this chapter. So he develops a lot of the modern understanding about weak solutions and general properties of conservation laws. And then finally, the whole paper sort of culminates in this final statement where here he shows this theorem that I'll just mention in a second, where he solves the general Riemann problem for a general conservation law. So he only actually here, this is all he says about the proof. So he only really sketches the idea. And I will do so as well in just a few minutes, a little more detail than here, but if you're interested in a sort of modern proof of this, there's a really good version of it in Evans. So one of the books I pointed out, it is very readable and he goes into all the details. And so this is a sort of a more elaborate, sort of more detailed version of some of the ideas that Lux sketches here. Probably he thought that all of this is anyways obvious and not worth going into detail. I can actually really recommend this paper. It is very readable. You'll find essentially everything that we discussed in this chapter 4 in here. Most of the things, in particular here, the discussion on these Riemann invariants and characteristic fields. And you'll also find here, for example, this is where he defines his Lux entropy conditions, where he discusses entropy solutions and derives his Lux entropy conditions. And actually, when we discussed those, I actually followed a derivation exactly along the lines that Lux sketches here in this paper. So if anyone is interested, I can definitely recommend actually reading this original paper by his. All right, so now for almost 60 years, the solution is known. This has really sort of enabled computational hydrodynamics. So let me just get to the general problem. So before I state essentially the theorem, I just wanted to introduce the following notation. So as I mentioned multiple times, the idea is to use these special solutions to connect to arbitrary states in state space by introducing intermediate states in a way we'll see in a second. And so along these integral curves and the shock sets, as I mentioned earlier, there are branches that are not actually admissible solutions to the Riemann problem. So we have to make sure that we exclude those. And instead, we can define a different notion of a curve. By just combining the branches of shock sets and integral curves that are admissible. So let's focus on a pair of eigenvalues and eigenvectors of our conservation law. And again, we have a shock set corresponding to a state UL that we pick. And we have also an integral curve RK. Then we'll just define the following notation. We'll define a new curve, TK, by just concatenating the admissible parts. So we were saying that only RK plus is admissible. So that gives rise to special solutions, namely to the rarefaction waves. So this is existence of rarefaction waves. Then we include the point UL itself, and we include SK minus, which is the entropy satisfying branch of the shock set. So this is existence of K shocks. And so we define this in the case where this pair lambda k rk is genuinely nonlinear. And then in the case where we're in the degenerate situation. We don't have much of a choice, and the integral curve and the shock set reduce to one curve that corresponds to these contact discontinuity solutions. Okay, so essentially, if I sketch this, just to be clear, in state space, so we have our state UL here, and then there's, say, some finite region in which these fields don't change their character. And so we have, again, say this is our SK shock set, and say this is the integral curve RK, where here's RK minus and RK plus. See, here we have SK plus and SK minus. Then we would just take the admissible parts and this would be our new curve TK, along which we always find special solutions to the Riemann problem. And so we can do this for each eigenvector and eigenvalue separately. And so we get K of such curves with special solutions. Those curves are all differentiable. And so essentially, just to write this down explicitly, can be joined with a right state UR by a rarefaction wave. A K shock, that would be very precise, K rarefaction wave, a K shock, or a K contact discontinuity. If you are is somewhere along such a curve. So now we consider the general case. Where you are is not on such, doesn't lie on such a curve that gives rise to special solutions. Yeah, for some k 1 to m, where again, as usual, m is the number of equations of our set of conservation laws. And this is this theorem by Lux. Which states that if UL let's say UL is fixed and we again have a strongly hyperbolic system, And we also assume that every pair lambda k rk is either genuinely nonlinear or linearly degenerate on D. Then there exists a sort of neighborhood of UL within D such that for all right states that we could possibly pick in this neighborhood, we have a unique solution to the Riemann problem. So this is actually the general, but we don't need that. So UL, if x is smaller than zero, and right, if x greater than zero, which is constant along lines 3D origin. And this is just to say that what Eric earlier mentioned, so that it has to be a self-similar solution. So it only depends on x over t, so on the quotient of x over t. And so this is at most m plus one constant states connected by shocks where reflection waves and contact discontinuities. Okay, and so the idea of how this comes about, so I'll try to summarize essentially the proof or sort of the reason why this exists by a sketch. Because essentially the main idea can get sort of easily hidden in the details. So this is again sort of the sort of graphical way that essentially I like to think about this. So let's say this is this neighborhood of UL that we pick. And let's look at essentially all the eigenvector fields. So I'm just drawing this here in this two-dimensional projection, just looking at with 1 and 2, then associated with all of these eigenvector fields, we have, of course, these corresponding curves T. So this is T2, which is a combination of these admissible shock sets and rarefaction waves. And essentially, you can think of, since we have a strongly hyperbolic system here, all these eigenvectors provide a complete set. So they provide essentially a basis. So essentially, you can think of this as of these curves here, essentially as providing local coordinates in the state space, at least for a sort of a tiny subset, which here we call this D tilde set. So if we follow these integral curves, you can essentially think of those as sort of local coordinate lines in a sense. And so if we, the idea is essentially if we then start to pick a random state you write in a set that doesn't live on such a special curve, then essentially the idea is to combine to essentially describe this in these local coordinates, in a sense, where you would sort of in this case, for example, and this is something that one has to check in practice, then if that would be the right way to go here. For example, we first go along T1 in this direction. We introduce an intermediate state here. And then we follow the corresponding curve T2 through Z1 and sort of hit UR. And so if we, so the idea is then if we choose these intermediate states carefully, we'll be able to connect, to eventually connect UR and UL through this sort of path of special solutions. And so essentially this is how the general solution then arises as a essentially superposition of constant states, of M plus one constant states that are each, so each state is joined with neighboring states by either such a shock solution or a rarefaction wave, depending on sort of the exact local conditions here. So the idea is to connect UR and UL following with local coordinates . And so essentially, I see also that we got quite far here in time, so we only have like 25 minutes left. So I will actually not dive into the proof here. I will actually skip it. I might anyways just bore you going through the details. But the sketch here is really sort of what summarizes the idea. So in more technical terms, essentially the idea of the proof here is to formulate this as an inverse function theorem application, where essentially you define a function that maps essentially any distance between UR and UL. Let me see. So, which essentially maps any sort of epsilon distance along. So essentially what you introduce is essentially you measure the length along these curves TK. And so you have a function that maps distances. So a distance vector epsilon 1 to essentially epsilon m that corresponds to a distance. So if this is epsilon 1 and this is epsilon 2, for example, it maps these distances to intermediate states z, and then you can sort of use the fact that there's a strictly hyperbolic system and so on, and show that that a function actually can be inverted, and so you can map any state UR to a unique set of these epsilon 1 to m that exactly tell you where to go on these coordinate lines, and then exactly how to join these constant states to sort of generate the general solution. So this is in sort of the two sentence summary of what's happening here. One immediate consequence here is also that sort of the infinitesimal version of this also essentially, this will, if we just restrict it to a really tiny infinitesimal set d tilde, then this essentially just reduces to ur minus u left, where we just have a sum over the basis vectors rk of these eigenvectors that form a complete basis. And so this is also known as the linearized Riemann problem. So for linear systems, for example, that would apply. Okay. So then let me just draw essentially the picture of how the general solution will look like once we found this combination of intermediate states. So we can order the, we have this ordering of characteristic speeds. We have our constant state UL here on the left. And so we have essentially M such discontinuities or rarefaction waves. So this would be just the connection between the ith states here. And so here we would have essentially lambda m. And here's our constant state ur that lives here. And here in the, and these intermediate states are essentially these here. So, which I refer to as Z1 to Zm. Which are constant on lines through the origin. So here we have Z1 Okay, Zi, so this would be Z1, Z2, and so on. These intermediate states, and typically it's just sort of these dotted lines. Usually, if you draw such a Riemann problem diagram, in a sense, these dotted lines usually indicate contact discontinuities, whereas the solid lines here refer to either shock waves or rarefaction waves. And so this is essentially the general solution to a general Riemann problem. Okay, this is essentially all I wanted to say for this general case. The idea would now be to discuss this sort of in concrete terms. So this is has been fairly abstract so far. But it's actually fairly powerful because this formalism can be just applied to any set of conservation laws and is so very general. But so I wanted to look at a concrete case now that is obviously very relevant for computational astrophysics, namely the Euler equations. And so I wanted to discuss the general solution to the Riemann problem for the Euler equations, and then maybe a few of these sort of fairly abstract concepts here become more clear and more concrete. But do we have any questions so far?
Daniel, I have one question.
Yes.
So in regards like unicity, so where can we see on this like path that we make from like UL to UR that this path is either unique or that if you take different paths, the solution is the same? Is there like an intuitive way to see that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So essentially the uniqueness comes through the fact that we have a strongly hyperbolic system. So that these R1 to Rm, these eigenvectors form a complete set. And so that gives rise, you know, if you have a basis, then you have and you fix, you know, the labeling R1 to Rm in a certain way, then you have a unique representation of a vector in that basis. And that is exactly what's happening here. These coordinates, R1 to Rk, so these integral, they're not integral curves, but at least parts of that will be integral curves. They provide sort of locally coordinates for the state space. And so there's a unique representation of any vector UR in these local coordinates. And so this is essentially what provides the uniqueness result. And so in very concrete terms, essentially, this is used in the proof where you do this mapping between the distance vector and this general state. And so there you can see that the Jacobian of this transformation has actually the eigenvectors R1 to Rm as rho vectors. And so it's perfectly invertible and unique. Okay, yeah, really good question. Anything else?
Sorry. So yeah, is there like any practical way like to determine what your dead tilde is, or you just go to the computer and you see when it starts failing?
Good question. No, you can actually estimate that. In the general case, I'm not aware of like a general formula that tells you how far you can go. But at least for the Euler equations, this is known. I don't recall it exactly off the top of my head, but I think the difference, I actually have to look it up, but it's the difference in states. So if you look at, there's a jump condition essentially there, like a smallness condition that goes like the sound speed on the left side plus the sound speed on the right side. And then I think if you have an ideal gas, you divide by you multiply by 2 over I think the adiabatic index minus one or something, and that tells you essentially how far you can go. So UL, I think something like UL minus UR is so this separation essentially of states scales something like 2/γ-1, and then you have the sound speed on the left hand side and the sound speed on the right hand side, something like this. So you can, it's actually known how far you can go for the Euler equations. And yeah, if you go outside that, then in general, there's no solution and your Riemann solver will simply crash. Because then the non-uniqueness essentially, you know, sort of breaks down here. And your these coordinate, so these coordinate lines, these curves TK are not no longer actual coordinates. And so it breaks down and then you don't have a solution in general. Great. Okay. All right. So if there are no further questions, then I would quickly start the discussion now. So applying this sort of fairly abstract formalism essentially to the concrete case of the Euler equations. And that will then tell us how to actually write a Riemann solver. In this case, so this is the Riemann, start a new chapter, the Riemann problem. For the Euler equations. So I'll just start by pointing out.
Sorry to interrupt while you're
you're
getting started. Yeah. So you've probably said it a few times, but so the Riemann problem seems to be so specialized. Can you say, you know, how come it's the key to solve general fluid problems or general conservation law problems and more general?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for the question. That's that's great. So this is what I'm trying to get at, and we'll see this hopefully next week. We'll see it next week. So the idea is that so in general, as we've shown a lot earlier in the course, that in the sort of nonlinear case, you can form these discontinuous solutions like shocks and rarefaction waves and contact discontinuities and things like that. So you need some numerical scheme that is able to handle discontinuous solutions or weak solutions. And if you use finite differencing, which we also talked about, then you always make the implicit assumption that everything is smooth and differentiable. And so any scheme that is based on finite differencing will then simply not be able to catch that weak solution that we are actually interested in, and that is the physical solution to our problem. So you have to find and define schemes that are able to handle discontinuities. And so it turns out that with any of, as I said, the finite differencing methods, it's very hard. There are so-called hybrid approaches where one tries to connect essentially a conservative finite differencing scheme like Lax-Wendroff or so with a shock tracking scheme, so that you only use such schemes in smooth parts of the solution, and then you try to keep track of where a discontinuity is, and you essentially specify that as some boundary problem to the piecewise smooth parts. But that comes very soon for general problems. It just becomes very complicated to specify and actually to solve in practice, simply because these shocks can be in multi-dimensions can have very complicated geometries, and how you specify that as boundary conditions as you evolve the solution becomes increasingly complex and complicated. So that is not a really good way to go, although there's lots of literature on this. But the sort of more promising route, and this is what we are going to do, is to discuss so-called Godunov-type schemes, where you essentially center everything around discontinuities. And so what those schemes do is essentially they decompose the evolution of general initial data as into a set of local Riemann problems. So they will solve a Riemann problem at every given cell. So you discretize the solution and define a Riemann problem at every individual cell. You solve the Riemann problem at every individual cell, and then you combine the solutions of these individual Riemann problems, and this is how you get the update to the next time step. And so by design, you will then capture actual discontinuities that form that may form in the solution. And so by design, you're what people call shock capturing. And so you make sure that you actually pick out the right weak solution to the problem.
Okay. Yeah, I see it. Yeah. So it's the local Riemann problem that's right. Key here. Yeah. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. Okay. So the Euler equations in conservative form, we've seen them already on one of the problem sets. So remember, these were our conservative variables. These are the fluxes. And so in the following, we'll just make a simple assumption. Sorry, was there a question?
Yeah, sorry. I don't know if it's just me, but you're cutting off quite like a bit. Oh, I don't know if that's just me. It's a general question just to see.
Yeah, thanks. It could be that my internet connection again got unstable. Is it better now?
Yeah, you're frozen for about 20 seconds for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I also experienced it, but...
Okay, but now you can hear me again?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, perfect. Let's continue and let me know if I break up again. Okay, and so we'll make the simplifying assumption here in the following that we just look at an ideal gas. So the equation of state here will be the following, that the pressure is given by gamma minus 1 times the internal energy. With the total energy E given by the internal energy plus the bulk kinetic energy, so 1/2 rho U squared. And you've already shown on I believe the first problem set even that the eigenvalues here are the following. And so we have also the corresponding eigenvectors. And then, U plus C, so it's the same as analogous to, was not good use of the space here. So these were the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of our Jacobian. And you will actually show on the current problem set that these pairs lambda 1, R1, and lambda 3, R3, are genuinely nonlinear. And this is actually true throughout the state space, in this case of the Euler equations. And then the intermediate pair is a linearly degenerate pair. And also, I just wanted to mention, you also showed us on the current problem set that we have the following Riemann and K Riemann invariants. So the specific entropy is a Riemann invariant. And so we have the following K Riemann invariants. And they will now actually help us construct the solution. So this is why I had to introduce sort of all these concepts. So associated with the first eigenvalue lambda one, we have the entropy and u plus 2c over gamma minus one. So these are the two k, the two one Riemann invariants. Then for the second eigenvalue, we have the velocity itself and the pressure. And for the third eigenvalue, we have again entropy, specific entropy, and u minus 2c over gamma minus 1. And so just by this basic analysis, we can already deduce what the general structure of the Riemann, of the solution to the Riemann problem must be, just by essentially knowing these few facts. So we have for sure the following setup. So here on the left, again, we have our constant state UL. So our initial data that will be just injected over here. And our data UR here, then we'll have a genuinely nonlinear wave here corresponding to our third eigenvector and eigenvalue lambda three. And similarly for lambda one. And so those can be either shock waves or contact or rarefaction waves. So there's different options here. But for sure, we know that the second eigenvalue, lambda two, will always give rise to a contact discontinuity because that will always be linearly degenerate and there's only one option in this case. So for sure, we know that this will be a contact discontinuity. Now, in here, this is what is often referred to as the star region, which is essentially joined by two intermediate states. So this would be Z star two, and here we have Z star one. We will actually, so this is sort of in the notation of our previous general solution to the Riemann problem. We'll actually refer here, we'll actually work in primitive variables. We'll start to work in primitive variables in a second instead of conservatives, because that will be easier will prove to be easier to construct the solution. So we will have a set of primitive variables W star left to the contact discontinuity, and we will have a set of primitive variables W star R right to the contact discontinuity. And then we'll have a set of primitives here corresponding to the initial data and also on the left side. An analogy to this. And so as I said, the only wave that is already fixed is lambda 2, that is always a contact discontinuity. And then lambda 1 and lambda 3 can be either shocks or rarefaction waves depending on the initial data. So UL and UR, the combination of UL and UR will tell us which case we are in. And so depending on that initial data, we then must find the correct solution to this. So there's only four choices, if you want. So let me just draw this real quick, and then we'll finish with this. So we'll have four cases, right, where either we have rarefaction waves for lambda one. So this would be, we will have a sort of fan-like solution here, and we'll have a shock wave here and a contact discontinuity here. Or we'll have a shock wave here, a contact discontinuity, and then a rarefaction wave associated with lambda three. We can have a solution where both lambda one and lambda three are rarefaction waves, and then also we'll have a two shock solution where we have a left shock and then also here a shock to the right and a contact discontinuity here. And so next time we'll discuss how to actually identify, so given arbitrary initial data, how to actually identify which solution we are in, which of the four cases we are in. And that is essentially all that a general Riemann solver for the Euler equation will have to do. And so we'll go essentially through the solution strategy of how to do this next time. Okay, so time is up. Any final questions? Thoughts? Okay. Well, if not, I don't want to keep you much longer. If people are interested, tomorrow there are going to be office hours again, although they will have to be short tomorrow because we'll have a colloquium at 2 p.m. And other than that, see you on Thursday. Thanks.
Thanks, Daniel. Can I keep you on the line for just a couple more minutes?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Thanks,
Daniel. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.